Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Everybody, thanks for tuning in today. So glad you joined us. I'm Bill Arnold, in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're here doing our very best to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. We just had hour one with J. Warner Wallace, and if you missed it, definitely go listen to that podcast because it is so much information in there. He's a cold case homicide detective from Los Angeles, an avowed atheist for many, many years, and he finally came to faith in Christ, and then he took his skills as a detective to look at the evidence for Christianity. So we all probably need help in defending our faith, and this is a great resource. Cold Case Christianity is the book, and he is a fascinating guy. And in this hour, we've got Bill Farrell on, and we're going to talk about the very simple seven skills for every man, and I hope I have at least one of them. That's my goal, that I will find myself having one simple skill. Matt, you're looking at me like, not likely.
You said it, not me.
Makes me a little tense, just a little tense. Our second hour guest, though, is Bill Farrell. He's an author, a speaker, and co-founder and co-director of LoveWise, an organization to help people connect love and wisdom and bring practical insights to their personal relationships. Bill and his wife, Pam, have written more than 30 books. The ambitious type, I already don't like him. Including Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, and Red Hot Monogamy. You can find his influencer page at myfaithradio.com. Matter of fact, I've spoken to Bill before. That was a joke. I do like him a lot. He's a nice guy. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
I already feel like we've done the guy thing. Like we've already gotten started and you already don't like me. Like that's good guy stuff.
That's
right?
Total good guy stuff. You know, that just says I respect you and I like you.
That's exactly right.
But, you know, that's the way guys talk. You know,
women, I was thinking the exact same thing about Cold Case Christianity.
Yeah.
Like, man, now that's an interesting guy.
Oh, it's a total interesting guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and then you and I got to take over from him.
I know it's painful. Let me tell you, it's painful. But now I'm already very tense because the seven simple skills every man should have. I'm going, this could be a bad hour for me. So, but success in relationships, work, and your walk with God is something. Let's face it, all of us want to be better at, and men in particular would benefit from this book and what we're going to learn today from you. So let's get things started. Susie always likes to talk scripture. So what do you got for me, Bill?
Well, I've got Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 9 through 11, and I chose this because it was really personal to me lately. So the passage says, "What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in his time." And I read this recently, and it's always kind of bothered me that these two thoughts sit right next to each other. I've seen the burden God laid on the human race. And immediately afterwards, he's made everything beautiful in its time. And I hadn't ever seen it before, but I realized when I read this, this is part of how God moves us in our life from one season of life to another. Because the things that used to be beautiful to us, like the things that used to work well and capture our interest, become a burden when their time is done.
Mm-hmm.
And it got really personal to me because I've entered a new phase of life where all of my kids are now married. And, like, the house we live in is just way too big for my wife and I. It was great when we had kids around. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, they like, bump into everything, and they need room to operate. And now it just seems like a burden taking care of it. And so we're in a process of downsizing.
Nice.
So what used to be beautiful becomes a burden, and it's one of the things God uses to steer our lives and say, hey, it's time for the next season, so refocus now.
I like that a lot. Now, before we get into the book, I just want to ask you, we've gone in a culture from father knows best to father knows nothing. I mean, where Homer Simpson is now the dad we all look at and go, what an idiot, you know, and we all laugh at him. And then maybe this is just a personal bias, but it seems like when you go to church on Mother's Day, and mothers are the greatest things in the world, but the pastor might say, oh, moms are just the most amazing ever. They're just so wonderful. And on Father's Day, it's always, men, we've got more work to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, is there a bias there? Or is that just me?
Well, I think we have to have our eyes shut to not realize that there is a bias that has developed.
All right.
But it doesn't change the fact that men are highly influential. And one of the reasons why I think men have been like evaluated so much and even criticized so much is because we have so much natural influence. Like it's really interesting that I met the guys who set up the program called Top Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And DOG stands for Dads of Great Students.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the simplest thing ever. It is this group working with school principals saying, if you're interested, we will organize the men in your school to have one man on campus each day to do whatever you want him to do. So it could be you want him to clean windows, he'll do that. You want him to work the line on the bus, he'll do that. You want him to pick up trash, he'll do that. It doesn't matter whatever you want him to do. And everywhere that this Top Dogs program has started, behavior problems have gone down and grades have risen. Simply because men are hanging around.
Mm.
And so as men, we have that natural influence, so it makes us targets for people wanting to kind of break us down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, men just showing up have influence.
Wow. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So your book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man, Success in Relationships, Work, and Your Walk with God. Okay, and I'd love to know what prompted you to write this one.
Well, I started... like when I was pastoring
books.
A church, I started to realize that like everybody I know was overcomplicating their life. And I would read in the Bible that God gives pretty simple directions to people, and then people take those simple directions and make them really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at my own life, and I looked at the lives of men that were my friends, and we all kind of like to keep things simple. And then I raised three boys, and I realized if I make things too complicated with my boys, they just check out.
Mm.
And so I thought there must be some really simple things that guide life that ought to be really common knowledge. Like when we say them, we all ought to go, yeah, that's right, yep, absolutely. But it seems like it's gotten lost in the complication of life. So this is my attempt to start simplifying the process and getting the message back to men. Hey, being a man is really pretty simple. It's not easy because simple and easy are two different things in life.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few simple things that if we just get those done right, life's going to go pretty well for us.
Okay, Bill, you talk in the book, you open it with a story of driving down Water Street with your friend Ken. Tell us what he told you and how that ties into the success of a man.
So I was out in St. John, Newfoundland, and we were driving up the street, George Street, and Ken said – you probably don't want to be here late on a Saturday night when it was early on in its lifetime because it's where all the pubs were. And he said it's kind of like being on Bourbon Street in New Orleans for us down here in the U.S. And he said it got crazy and it got pretty wild, and there were a lot of fights that would break out. And the owners of the pubs were looking for a way to get guys to not fight so much, and they began to realize – all of the fights started with words back and forth between guys who had too much alcohol to drink.
Hmm.
So they started handing out like suckers at the end of the night. So as men were leaving, they'd hand them suckers, and with suckers in their mouth, the guys wouldn't talk. And when the talking went down, the fighting went down. And it hit me that it was just one of those really simple solutions to what looked like a complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing one simple thing, the streets got more manageable.
Hmm.
And it's just a great picture to me of really what us men do. When us men simplify things and we do a few simple things well, our influence goes up, the tension goes down, and we have better relationships in every arena of our life.
Hmm. All right, here's a quote from your book, and I found this interesting. A man's life is not supposed to be defined by what he isn't and what he doesn't do. I mean, I think we're always being measured about what we're not. You know, and that's painful for guys. I mean, guys can get wounded easily if we sit around and think about what we're not.
Well, my perspective, Bill, is that somewhere along the way, we got afraid of the fact that men are powerful individuals. Like I don't know about you, but I don't have any male friends who have a desire to be calm and weak. Like every guy I know wants to do something worthwhile, and he wants to do something powerful, and we got testosterone flowing inside of us, and we like things that are strong.
Mm-hmm.
And the message we get too often is don't. Like, don't be angry, don't be selfish, don't hit others, don't be mean, don't be so loud, don't be so quiet, don't say so much, don't say so little. And it becomes this don't
mm-hmm.
in trying to harness the power of our lives. And it would be a little bit like giving a guy a motorcycle and saying, hey, just make sure you don't ever start the engine on this thing because it's loud.
Yeah, or never take it out of second gear.
Right.
Yeah.
And the purpose of getting the motorcycle so you can ride it.
Right.
And in the same way, the purpose of God making us strong and powerful is so that we would use all that strength in life, not shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to use it with skill, because again, if we don't stay on the road, we're going to be a big accident.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to use the power with skill, but the point of giving us power is so that we would use it.
Okay, what's holding men back? What do you think is holding men back from being successful or strong?
Well, I think the first thing is their own confidence, because it doesn't sound very godly to say, man, God made us strong. Like my first chapter in the book is all about focusing our passions. And one of the points I make is God deliberately made you and I, Bill, as passionate individuals.
Mm-hmm.
By giving us testosterone and by giving us bigger muscles than our female counterparts, he gave us this passionate approach to life. So we're supposed to be passionate about God and passionate about our families and passionate about our careers and passionate about the ministry that God lays in our heart. And we're supposed to be passionate about our hobbies because it puts us into relationships with other men who care about those same hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like men don't have confidence in being passionate. Like, we're so afraid it's going to turn into something bad that we're afraid to admit that, yeah, we're passionate. Like I don't know about you, but I have a strong love for Jesus, and I have a goal of being passionate about my wife for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see my kids, they get big passionate hugs from me, and when they're doing well in their careers, like, I'm loud about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way God made us.
Yeah, I like that. You're making a fuss, aren't you? And people love it when someone makes a fuss about them.
Absolutely. Like it's interesting to me. All of my boys follow the athletic route.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting to me that when they were in the midst of their competition, they always looked to see if I was there. And when I yelled loud, they would turn and look. They just knew I was there, and they wanted me. Like in one sense, they were embarrassed, but in the other sense, they were really glad I was there.
Yeah. Huh.
And they knew I was proud of them because I was willing to be passionate about it.
Okay. Bill, this is going to be a fun hour. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we got lots of stuff to go through in the book, and I'm going to pepper you with questions, so get ready. Sound good?
Bring it on.
All right. All right, schoolboy, I will. You're listening to Live the Promise, Bill Arnold, in today for Susie Larson. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise, Bill Arnold, in today for Susie. We're talking to Bill Farrell. He's written a book, one of 30, Mr. Ambition here, making me look like a complete slug. 7 simple skills for every man. And let's say a guy, I want to get into these 7 skills, though, Bill, but just before we start, a guy's living kind of a flat, lining, stagnant life. He's been playing it safe for a long time. What's the long-term effect of that guy? What's going to happen to him?
Well, a guy who's not operating like at his level of strength is going to get bored with life, and he's either going to become really passive and just kind of float through life and live kind of mediocre and be frustrated with who he is, or he's going to become an angry man. Because, again, when you have you have all that strength in your life and power in your life, and it's not going anywhere, it affects other parts of your life, and it makes you angry at people who you think are holding you back.
Mm-hmm.
So men who are not pursuing their adventure and aren't pursuing their passions, they're either angry or bored. And if you look around our world today, what you see is a bunch of men who are either angry, and sometimes they take it out on people who are much weaker than them,
mm-hmm.
or they get angry at really inconvenient times. Like, I'm amazed at how many men yell while they're driving and yell at their kids and are really angry with their bosses. Or they're just bored and they're looking for, like, goofy things to do to fill the hole that's there because they're not living the life God intended for them, and so they're looking for something to add some enthusiasm to their life.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the seven things that you talk about in the book. Focus your passions, that's number one, and that's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there's a story I love to tell that reminds me of what it means to focus your passions. I had the opportunity to be over in Germany, and I stayed with a guy who was a veterinarian in the Army. And when I got to his house, there was a Mini Cooper sitting in his driveway. So over dinner, I said to him, I said, hey, I noticed you have a Mini Cooper, like, and the Autobahn's like 4 blocks from here.
Yeah.
So when are we going out?
Yeah.
And his 18-year-old son said, well, I'll take you out after dinner. And I don't know the wisdom of letting an 18-year-old driver take me on the Autobahn, but, mm-hmm. you know, as a man, once you've committed, you just step up and you do it.
Yeah.
So as we're leaving the house, he says to his son, hey, no going over 130 miles an hour. Something I've never said to my sons, but wish I had.
Uh-huh.
And when we got on the Autobahn and we were going 130 miles an hour, and two Porsches passed us like we were standing still.
Mm-hmm.
And my first reaction was, I want to be in that Porsche. Like,
yeah.
That's the real ride over there. And about 10 minutes later, we passed one of those Porsches. But it didn't look like a car anymore. It was this big heap of flaming metal because the guy who was driving the car apparently lost respect for the power that he had.
Mm.
And it's become a picture to me of, as men, we've got this power that God's put in us, and we need to focus it so that we get a lot done in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real easy to get it out of focus. We live in a world that's constantly trying to distract us.
Mm.
And through the entertainment industry and the pornography industry and the whole feed your lust industry that's out there, it's really easy to get this passion distracted. And what should be a powerful life turns out to be this big accident and this flaming heap of potential.
Mm, okay.
And so it's just a good reminder to me that we got to own up to the fact that we're passionate and choose how we're going to apply it in our lives.
Yeah. And that's a big truth, and guys need to recognize that and start living that out, huh?
And I would say that most men I know can't do that alone. They need to have two or three trusted friends in their life,
sure.
who are willing to admit to it.
Yeah.
Because if I say to you, hey, Bill, we're passionate, we got to do something good with this, you'll go, yeah, I got it. If I say that to my wife, she'll go, like, that sounds dangerous.
Right.
See, and as men, we get it.
Yeah.
That we have to harness this and focus it. And so there's actually steps in the book on how do you find those guys that you can trust, because you don't want to just open up to every guy you meet because there's a bunch of knuckleheads out there.
Tell me about it. Men make other men better, don't they?
We absolutely do.
Yeah.
And we know how to banter with each other to bring out the best in one another.
Yeah.
And it sounds to women like we're being mean to each other, but like you said, we know how to bring out the best in each other.
Well, it's how we share our affection for each other is usually through insults.
That's right.
And that's
we like to compete with each other.
That's unthinkable to women, that you would say something as mean as you and I might say to each other off the air. Wait till we get off the air. I'll lay into you. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think it's because I know that if I throw a jab at you and you handle it well,
mm-hmm.
I know you're tough enough to do a powerful life with.
Cool. That's cool.
If you get offended by it, then I'm like, you don't have enough strength in your soul to keep up.
Okay. How about pray like a man?
Yeah. This came out of my just experience that so many men feel inadequate when it comes to prayer because we think it's a big verbal exercise. You know, if I don't pray like my pastor, if I don't pray like the guy on the radio, then my prayer doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
And the point point I make in the book is when men pray over their families, it's a very powerful thing. And the place to start in prayer is to listen. Because as men, we're not as verbal as our female counterparts. But we're actually, I think, better at listening in prayer. And so I tell men, hey, you ought to at least once a week just take the time you would spend thinking you have to pray, and instead of trying to come up with your own prayer, just say, God, would you go first? And then assume any thought that comes to your mind is something that God wants to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Because what I noticed is men were saying, okay, God, I want to talk to you, and then like the ugly stuff of their life would come up. And they would assume that like they were in a big spiritual battle and Satan's trying to disrupt their prayer life. And I'm thinking, no, I think God's just being a good dad to you.
Mm, I like that.
Because if my kids come to me and they want to talk about something, if I know there's something going on in their life that's not good for them, I'm going to find a way to bring it up. And if I'm going to do that as an earthly dad, God's way ahead of us. And what I have found is men who are willing to do that, say, God, you go first, and deal with whatever comes up and talk to God about it, it takes the mystery out of their struggles and puts God in the middle of it. And now God's a colleague of theirs in fighting the battle rather than being an accuser.
No, I like that.
Yeah, because a lot of men think God's accusing them and calling them, like saying, you're doing bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And God's not doing that. God's saying, hey, life's tough and I'm here with you. Let's pool our resources and go.
Mm-hmm. Bill, we've got a couple minutes before we go to a break, but I do want to ask, and this is a tough one for me, is pursue a plan. I'm terrible at planning, so this one's going to hurt. So I set it up that we have to go to break so I don't have to listen to you ramble on for too long and hurt my feelings. So go ahead.
Well, it's actually really simple because most men are afraid of making plans because we think we have to figure it all out ahead of time. And the only reason why you ought to have a plan, Bill, is to keep you moving. And so if you have something you're working on with the attitude that, God, I'm gonna move this direction, but feel free to steer me at any time,
mm-hmm.
It puts you in a place where God can get you where you need to go in life.
Mm-hmm.
And God's not all that concerned whether you have it all figured out ahead of time. He just wants you moving.
Yeah.
He wants you doing something.
Yeah.
So that he can steer you where he wants you to go. And so I tell men all the time, don't overanalyze it. Don't overwork it. Just choose something that you know is worthwhile and then say to God, God, if you want to steer me differently, feel free. Until then, I'm going to move in this direction.
Yeah. God's more about doing his will in your life than maybe telling you what his will is, right?
Yeah. And he wants active partners.
Yeah.
He doesn't want you passively sitting on the couch until he, like, stirs you up.
Yeah.
He wants you in motion trying to figure out what you should do in life. And then he'll steer you and get you where you need to go.
Okay, cool. Now, 7 Simple Skills for Every Man. That's the name of the book. Bill Farrell's my guest. We've got 5 copies of his book giveaway. If you want to be one of the callers, you have a question for Bill, you can certainly fire it up. We'll take it. Or you just want to put your name in for a drawing to get one of the books. Either way, we're just delighted you might give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. We'll keep the conversation going with Bill on the other side of the break. In the meantime, we're going to take a short one. And when we come back, more with Bill Farrell. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold today in for Susie Larson. Thanks for listening. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie Larson, and we're having a great conversation with Bill Farrell. He's written a book called 7 Simple Skills for Every Man, one of 30 he's written. And I know men like to keep things simple. That's why he's even got the word simple in his title, which I appreciate. You know, Bill, it seems like even when it comes to stuff, you know, consumer goods, like women want a separate bottle for shampoo and a separate bottle for conditioner. You know, for men, you can slam shampoo, conditioner, mouthwash, body scrub, and grout cleaner all in one bottle, and we're happy.
Absolutely.
And make sure it's a big size.
If we ever see that, we think the guy that made it is brilliant.
Oh, yeah, he'd be Einstein in our world. And big enough size, that like complete with a foot pump, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And we buy it once a year, and that's it. All right, knock it off. Quit the laughing. Now let's get back to this. The seven simple skills for every man, because our listeners want to know. Build only what you can build. What does that mean?
Well, the way God made men is He made us to be builders. That if you look throughout the history of the Bible, men are building. You look at the history of the church, men are building. You look at industry and business and cities, and men are building. And my challenge to men is build something, because it's in the heart of a man to build. And usually when we bring this up, we get caught up in the idea that it must be something physical. You know, that men are swinging hammers and men are using tools. And for some men, that is their world. Like some men, they just feel right at home with something physical in their hands that they're going to build with. Some men should never touch any tool ever because somebody's going to get hurt. Because they don't have the physical gift. But life's more than building physically. Like, we need systems built to help churches and businesses and communities run well. We need technology built to help in all those arenas. We certainly need physical buildings that need to be built, but we also need communities built. Some of those are relational communities in our churches, and some of them are community operations in our neighborhoods. And when men decide that they're going to build something, they discover biblical manhood. Because every man has it in his heart to build something.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to me, having pastored for two decades, in the church, I noticed that men build things, and then women come and decorate them. So men will get the buildings up, but then the women make it look beautiful. And men will get the ministry started, and the women will come in and make them run better. And it's a great partnership. Like strategically, as a pastor, I thought, I need to engage men and women, because we need to be always building something, and then we need to make it look beautiful so when people walk in, they're impressed. And when we get both of those sides working, the church tends to hum along.
Yeah. Okay.
You take one of them out, and things start to slog.
Yeah, completely.
Yep.
All right, here's another skill men need to have. Be a skilled lover. I'm blushing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when you think about the challenge of the Bible, you know, when we talk about simple, when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, he summed up the whole Bible in two statements. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So if we as men are going to be as godly as we can here on earth, we got to figure out what it means to love. And so becoming a skilled lover, for those of you who are married, it certainly means learning how to reach your wife's heart and make her feel like she is the queen of your life. But it applies to all your relationships. But like the number one skill, I think if we all just said, you know what, I'm going to become a student of the people I care about. And you ask questions like, what are they good at? What are they not good at? What causes them to be motivated? Like, what are the things I say that raise their energy level? And what are the things I say that lower their energy level? And I'm going to start deliberately saying the things that raise their energy level. And what happens in those people's lives that make a difference in the people around them? I want to find out what that is. I'm going to encourage that in their lives. Do they do better when I talk softly to them, or do they do better when I kind of shout at them? Because depending on their personalities, they're going to respond to different approaches. And if we as men simply did that, we just got curious about the people we care about and started being deliberate about how we interact with them, we will become a better influence in their lives, and they will say, that man loves me. They won't even know why, but they will say, that man loves me because I'm better when I'm around him.
No, I like that a lot. Yeah.
And I know, having raised three boys, like, they're all very different. If I took the same approach with all three of my sons, I would have succeeded with one of them and probably failed with the other two, because they are so different. Like, my oldest son is black and white. If it's right, you do it. If it's wrong, you don't. And if you choose not to do the right thing, you're stupid. Just very straightforward, black and white. And you just have to speak directly to him. My middle son, he was made for the stage. Like, the more attention you give that kid, the more he loves life. And so if you cheer him on, like, he cleaned his room and you throw a party, he becomes the best room cleaner you've ever seen. And so, of course, he went to college on a cheerleading scholarship. because he wanted to be in the limelight all the time. And my youngest son is an engineer, and he just wants answers. They don't tell me what, tell me why. Because if I understand why, I'll get it done.
And you learned that about them from spending a lot of time with them, didn't you? And investigating
yeah.
into their lives and asking questions and paying attention. Of course, they're your kids, so you had a lot of opportunity for that, but way to go.
Yeah, but I think that's really what it comes down to. Being a skilled lover means you get curious about the people you care about
mm-hmm.
and then treat them the way they like to be treated.
Okay. All right, what about finish what you start?
You know, it's interesting that one of the main pictures in the Bible of life is about being an athlete. And we are told in 1 Corinthians 9:24 that we're supposed to run in such a way that we win. So the implication of that is you don't ever give out awards halfway through the race. You always give out awards at the end. And so part of being a man is to say, I am going to finish what I start. So if I start a project, I'm going to work it through to completion, even if it takes me longer than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
And then it applies to our commitments in life. So, but like if we said we were going to be married for life, we mm-hmm. determine in our heart, I'm going to be married for life.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean I'm committing to be miserable with my wife for the rest of my days.
Yeah.
That means I'm committed to figure out how this thing works and how we can have a successful relationship.
Yeah.
It applies to parenting. Like all of us as parents have made mistakes. And all of us have had days that we wish we hadn't acted the way we did. But, like, I don't know about you, Bill, but I can remember my worst day of parenting like it was yesterday.
Mm.
And it was an experience I had with my middle son.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the kid that was hardest for me to understand because he was so spontaneous and his needs were so not like mine that he was hard work for me to figure out. And there was a day when I was so angry at him that I was at the point where I was ready to hurt him. And the thing that stopped me is I saw the panic in his eyes. And it stopped me, and I realized I'm about to make the biggest mistake of my parenting life right now. I need to stop. And I caught myself, and I just said, Pam, you got to deal with him. And I walked out of the room.
Wow.
And you know, we're all afraid that on that day, we ruined our kid on that day. Like, we were so bad and we were so out of control that I just ruined my child. And despite having days like that, we need to stay engaged and we need to finish the process
mm-hmm.
with our kids. And God's grace is always available, thank God. I even had a conversation with my son a couple years ago, and I asked him if he remembered that day. And he looked at me with a blank look, like, I don't really know what you're talking about, Dad. Which I was like, thank you, Jesus,
yeah, and,
for loss of memory.
Yeah.
Because it really was not a good moment for me.
Yeah. So,
I
go ahead, Bill.
Well, I could have easily said, I don't trust myself. I need to back off.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to be godly men, we just say, no, I need to finish what I started. I need to reengage and use this as a learning experience and figure out how to parent this child.
Yeah, so finish what you start. I will speak on behalf of all men to all women right now. And that's this. Ladies, if we say we're going to do something, we're going to do it. You don't have to remind us every 6 months.
Because people eventually get around.
Exactly. Which brings me to my next point, Bill, and I've been holding off on this one, and that is act your age. Now, we're to make a distinction between acting childish and acting childlike, because childlikeness is really fun and playful and spontaneous, but we have to handle the responsibility. How do we do that and keep a childlike spirit?
Well, this is one of those areas of life I wish I had known about earlier, because as I look at life now, I realize life in modern America, it comes to us in very distinct seasons of life. And I broke it down into decades just so that it makes it easier for us to talk about. That in each of the decades of our life, there's a specific purpose that we're supposed to focus on. So in our 20s, we are supposed to be idealistic. Like it is in our 20s that God builds faith into our life. And if you hang around young guys in their 20s, they say things like, we can do this. God is great. God is big. God's amazing. We can make this happen. And as older guys, we tend to look at them and say, they're not being very realistic. Like they don't have an idea of budgeting. They don't have a good idea of setting goals. They're just like kind of out there. And we tend to like kind of break down their faith because we're not willing to let them be idealistic. And so in our 20s, we need to have the idea of I need to get the idea in my heart that I know a big God who can do big things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who have an influence on guys in their 20s need to encourage that so their faith grows.
Mm-hmm.
And then our 30s is a time to be industrious, that we have made decisions in our life, we've made commitments in our life, and we have a lot of energy. So our bodies are strong. Like I know when I was in my 30s, I would go to bed at night because I know it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
At this stage of my life, I go to bed at night because I'm done.
Right.
I got nothing left to put in. But in my 30s, I could work long hours, and I could get after it.
Yeah.
And we need encouragement. Learn how to work hard when you're in your 30s because it lays a great foundation for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Have men lost their sense of wonder as you get older? Is that a problem for men, that we become a little numb with all the responsibilities we have and we've kind of lost our sense of wonder?
I think that's a big part of it, Bill. We get so wrapped up in responsibility and what we have to do,
mm-hmm.
that we forget that we're on this adventure in life. But I also think one of the reasons we lose our sense of wonder is nobody's telling us about the next stage of our life. Because the 40s, like life is intense when you're in your 40s because your body starts to change. And as men, we don't like that. We don't like the fact that testosterone drops in our life. We don't like the fact that we start dealing with health issues. Like none of that's fun for us. And raising teenagers is intense. Because they're just unpredictable, and they're self-centered, and they're trying to become independent, but they don't have much wisdom yet. And so it's a really intense time of life. And it's setting us up for, like, studies show that our 50s and 60s are actually the two most influential decades of a man's life. And the reason why it's so influential is we're living longer than we used to.
Mm.
Like I went walking through the one of the cemeteries in Boston. And I was looking up some of the gravestones of some of the heroes of our country. And I was stunned at how young they died. Like if a guy made it to 60 back then, he was old. But most of those guys were dying in their late 40s, early 50s. And today, most people expect to live into their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually added a new developmental stage of our lives that in our 50s and 60s, our wisdom kicks into gear, and the people around us want to know what we know.
Mm-hmm.
But a man who's not ready for it gets intimidated by that. Think about how many men say, "Oh, don't follow my example. Do better than me." When in reality, guys are looking at us in our 50s and 60s and saying, "I want to know what you know.
Interesting.
I want to learn what's important from you."
Yeah.
And if a man will embrace it, there's a whole new adventure that opens up. A man who rejects it is just back in the work mode, and life feels boring because
mm-hmm.
he's missing out on the next stage of his life.
So men need other men to help them be better and speak truth into their life, because you hate to see men at that age feeling a loss of confidence when should be a period of great wisdom for them and adventure. And this is phase two where you should get some resurrection strength going, huh?
Yeah. And Billy, you and I, we need to call the I'm going to call them older men, but like 50s and 60s, I don't think is really old, but they're older. We need to call them out and say, "Guys, you've been through life experience. You've got some real wisdom in life. You know what works and what doesn't. We need you to get involved in the lives of younger guys."
Mm-hmm.
And then those of us in our 50s and 60s, we need to call the younger men out.
Yeah.
Because when we look at a 30-year-old man and say, "Hey, you can do this. I believe in you, and you can do this," there's a strength that rises up in that guy that no other experience on earth can make happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like our wives can say, "Come on, Bill, I'm proud of you."
Yeah.
But that's different than an older man calling a younger man out.
Yeah. Your wife's voice is very attractive, by the way. I assume you do a terrible impression of her.
I do.
Yeah. All right, Bill, here's the deal. Here's the deal. I'm going to ask you this question, then we're going to go to break. And when we come back from the break, I want you to think about this over the break. Like, hobbies are really good. Guys need to be involved in hobbies and stuff. But what happens when they turn into an idol? Okay, so that's the question. We're going to take a little break. Listen to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold today in for Susie Larson. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. So glad you joined us today. Hope you're enjoying our conversation with Bill Farrell, who wrote a book called Seven Simple Skills for Every Man. And we are, right before break, I asked him a question. It's good that men have hobbies. What happens when a hobby turns into a runaway idol and it starts to interfere with life and relationships and everything else?
Which, by the way, Bill, you ask great questions, which I bring that up because the way to develop wisdom in your life is by asking questions. Well, too many men think that you get wisdom by having answers.
Yeah.
You actually get wisdom by having questions.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That was actually a caller from a listener, so I can't really take credit for that one. Yeah. We have very smart listeners on this show.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
So my comment on the hobbies thing is that hobbies were given to us by God for a purpose, that hobbies are designed to get us into relationship with other people in a way that men do well. Because a lot of men are intimidated by the face-to-face conversation kind of influence, but they're really good at the side-by-side doing something together kind of influence.
Mm-hmm.
I got this friend named Harold who has since passed away, but Harold is one of these guys who has a lot of wisdom in life, but he could not make a presentation if his life depended on it. If you put him in front of a group and told him to organize his thoughts, he would just like melt right in front of you. But if you put him on any kind of a project, if it's a, you know, we're planning a camping project, we need to fix something at the church, we're gonna build a new anything. If I put three guys around him helping him do something, he will start sharing his wisdom with those three men, and everybody comes away better men because they spent time doing something with Harold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the purpose of hobbies, is to create experiences for people and to get us into relationship with people where we can extend our influence. And when hobbies start to become the thing and they start pushing people away, they lose their value. And men start to become either protective of it because they don't want to give it up so they can have more influence, so they start to become protective of the hobby, or they start to ignore the people they're supposed to be influencing and replace it with the hobby itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so as men, we need to have hobbies, but we need to have hobbies we can invite people into.
I like it.
When you invite other people into it, they fulfill their purpose and you extend your influence into their lives.
Okay, Bill, here's another question. This is actually a quote from your book. A man's character is revealed at the end of a project rather than at the beginning.
Right.
Okay, a man's willing to jump in and be all excited, but his determination to finish the venture reveals whether he is run by his whims and his character.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, because everybody can start stuff. And the way any project works, whether it's writing a book, doing an add-on to your house or a remodel, leading a Bible study, fixing your car, whatever the project is, about 80% into the project, you start to not like it. And I'll just use an example from my life. When I write a book, when I'm about 80% done with the book,
mm-hmm.
it starts to feel really old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, everybody's heard this. There's nothing fresh in this book.
Mm-hmm.
This is just old material. And pushing through the last 20% of it, the fun is gone, and it's just sheer commitment at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even say that raising our families is that way, that there are seasons that are really fun in a family, and there are other seasons that are just really they just are a drag.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've often said, the age of a child that is my least favorite is 17, because when all three of my boys hit 17, they just had it handled.
Oh, yeah.
And they started to get sarcastic, and they would say things like, "Trust your parenting, Dad." And it's at that point that you just stay at it. You just push through it. And later on, you get to be friends with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 80% into any venture, the fun is gone, the magic is gone. And now it tests whether we're committed to follow it through.
Yeah.
Or if we were just in it for the fun.
Right. It was like me running my first marathon this year, you know, which was kind of a big accomplishment.
Not kind of, Bill. That's huge.
Well, I quit after two blocks. I hit the wall. I hit the wall at block one. And then block two, I hit a table that had the donuts on it. I was not making friends.
So how were the donuts?
They weren't bad, by the way. They were not bad.
Yeah, I admire those marathon runners so much because I don't know how they deal with the boredom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And training for it and all that? We digress. All right.
Now, yeah.
Now we're getting close to the end of the hour, so I got to ask some of the big questions. There's men driving in the car, sitting, listening, and they maybe feel like they're a little bit of a failure. They haven't accomplished enough in life. Maybe their marriage hasn't gone the way in which their wife looks at them and says, boy, you've been an amazing husband. Maybe it's their career that's flatlined, and their identity is starting to just take a whooping. And their identity is not strengthened in Christ, but it's in their circumstances, and they're dying.
And what I would say to that guy is just look for one thing that you can start to do. Because what happens to us as guys is we start to take inventory of our lives and we load up the failures.
Mm-hmm.
And when a man feels like a failure, he wants to give up. Because the way God wired us as men, we only want to do things we know we can succeed at. And if we start to load up the failures, as men, we get to a point where we just want to quit. It's not worth it to us anymore. But if a man can just choose one thing and say, I may not get it all right this year, but I'm just going to pick one thing. I'm going to become better at communicating with my wife. I'm going to be better at checking in with my kids. I'm going to be better at finishing projects around my house. I'm going to be better at meeting new people at church. If you just choose one thing, when you start to experience success, it energizes men. And so as men, it's never about getting it all right. It's about starting a new habit in our life of doing things well.
Mm-hmm.
And you always just start with one. Again, it's the simple thing in life. If you do one thing well, you'll find new motivation in your soul to do a second thing well.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So look for that one thing. Start doing it.
Yeah, there are definitely people listening today, or maybe they're married to someone who's suffering this way. And they just think, boy, I'm paralyzed with fear right now. And I'm going to ask you, my friend, to pray for them. I'll just listen and join you in prayer. Go ahead.
And Father, I just want to thank you for the prayer Bill asked me to pray because, you know, I grew up in a home that was run by fear. And it's easy for me to think that I cannot. And I just want to thank you that you showed me that if I simply do one thing well, you will add something else to my life that goes well. And it can become a habit in our lives. And so for those men who are listening and those women who are married to men who are just paralyzed by fear, I pray that you would show them this week that a breakthrough is right around the corner. And all they have to do is pick one thing to start focusing on, and you will do the rest. Just like the disciples when they had to feed the 5,000, they only had two lunches to bring. But when they brought those two lunches, you added everything else, and everybody ate till they were satisfied. And as men, I believe you can do that in our lives. So help us bring our two lunches, and God, may you then do through us what is beyond us. In Jesus' name we pray.
That's awesome, Bill. It's been great talking to you. Say, I just got a caller that said, please consider making this an audiobook. Such great content. It's been great.
Right,
yeah, it's been great. I've been speaking with Bill Farrell about his book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man, Success in Relationships, Work, and Your Walk with God. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Bill Arnold, in for Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this interview up on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for Live the Promise. I'll be here tomorrow as well. Ruth Sukup joins me to talk about how to unclutter your life. And Brad Lominick and I will talk about three keys to successful leadership. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.